All right, I hope that at this point in the book of Titus, we're beginning to realize that Titus is a book of congregational behavior in the home and in the church. And so he starts by telling Titus that he needs to set in order the things that are wanting. Now, when will that ever not be? When will there never be anything wanting in the church? And of course, the answer is never, because as I've observed through the years, the church is like a hospital. And there are sick people in the church. And sometimes we're healthy, sometimes we even get a little bit spiritually weak, spiritually sick, as Paul points out in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And so the responsibility, not just of the evangelist, but of all the members of the church, is to be their brother's keeper. Who's the first guy who brought up that point, but not in a very nice way?
Cain.
Cain. Am I my brother's keeper? What's the answer to that? Yes. Absolutely you are. We all are. That's what agape love is. That's what the second part of the Ten Commandments is all about. Jesus said the whole law is hung on love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And what's the second one?
Love
your neighbor as yourself. And as Jesus pointed out in the Sermon on the Mount, what do we call the golden rule? Okay. All things that you would have others do to you, do unto them. So if I'm spiritually weak, or if I've got a character flaw that you're noticing, and maybe I'm not, or maybe it's not as, I think it's a little less obvious than you do, what should you do? I mean, it's hard to do, because you never know what their response is going to be, but if we love each other, and everybody knows that we love each other, then those kind of things are going to be well received. But the evangelist Titus here, I see a car, I'll get to you in just a second. It looks like this battery's acting up a little bit. I think the battery's going to cut out in and out. And since I lost my point, go ahead, Carl.
Snatching them out of the fire.
I'm sorry?
Snatching them
out of the fire. Yeah, snatching them out of the fire. Most of us aren't too close to the fire, I don't think, at this point. That verse is dealing more with those of us who reach a level where church discipline is in the process of being put forth, or somebody who's not even a Christian. Okay, so the older men have certain characters, that there's or character strengths. We're supposed to read that. And if we find these character flaws, what should we do?
Correct them.
We should correct them. We're supposed to read that and look over the other people in the congregation, and I do this a lot. I mean, I pick up things from you guys as I spend time with you, and then I might wait 6 months before I deal with it, or I might deal with it the next week. It just depends on how important it is, and it just depends on how the lessons are progressing or proceeding. But that's what we do. And you can even call somebody up and say, look, I need to talk to you about something, and I'm going to come over and talk to you. You know, and it doesn't have to be it can be an exhortation, loving exhortation. And so the younger women here in verse 3 and 4 and 5, the older women are supposed to admonish the younger women. I had an elder one time tell me that, and I really appreciated it from that point on. He said, you know, I don't go talk to the younger women about modesty. I ask my wife, or I ask one of the older women to go talk to them about it. Because why would it be uncomfortable for a man to talk to a woman about immodesty? I mean, it's not because we're afraid. I mean, it's easy enough to go in there and just tell somebody your clothing isn't modest. But when you get into the nuts and bolts of it, I'd rather have a younger woman saying that kind of stuff than a man. Go ahead, Ralph.
That's what I was going to say. It'd be kind of awkward for a man to say, I've noticed you're immodest, your dress is too short. I mean, and the woman would know better maybe how to approach that. And I guess the younger woman should be more receptive to another woman,
right,
that recognizes that.
Yeah. And so it's just better if you can do that. Now, sometimes there's just no older woman you can ask. Sometimes it's so glaring and the person is so harsh and hard that you really wouldn't want to send your wife into that kind of a situation. And so at that point, we both go. My wife and I made an agreement years ago, and I've never violated it, and that is I don't teach classes to women without someone else present or without my wife present. Not necessarily because I don't trust myself. or she doesn't trust me. It's just foolish to put yourself in a situation like that where anything can be said, and if it's just you and her and something is said, what are you going to say? You know, my word against hers. All right, go ahead, Carl.
Also, if it's a home, you got to be careful about the neighbors seeing a single man going into a woman's home. But our influence is at stake as
right.
well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. All right, so the older women here are supposed to teach the younger women. And we made the point last week that sometimes congregations kind of get away from this. It's not something, I don't know if you could legislate it. Jean and I were talking about it this week. When I became an elder in Portland, we immediately got on this, and we had our wives go teach the younger women a lot of these things. And but that's the only time that I've really been in a situation where it's been formally done. You think it's going to be informally done. Problem is, a lot of times, if it's not monitored, how do we know if it's being done or not? But at the same time, who's going to monitor it? I mean, I don't know that you want the men of the business meeting sitting down and saying, okay, we're going to send this woman over to teach this woman this kind of thing. Although, if it's not being done, that might not be a bad idea. But there's two reasons why this isn't being done. The first reason is that sometimes there aren't any older women, or the older women don't want to do it. But a lot of times, the younger women don't want it. And, you know, I've been in situations. When I used to work in the world, I worked for an ambulance company for about 15, 16 years. And I would get opportunities, and you'd try to get them to want a class, and you'd hint around, and you'd actually ask them, and you could tell you were never going to get a class with them, because why?
They didn't want one.
And I found through the years that if they want one, then you can gently bring it around, and they'll ask for one. And if they don't, you can ask them point blank, and they won't do it. So that's another issue. All right, so the older women are supposed to admonish the young women. Now, the word admonish here is literally to restore one to his senses. That's what the word literally means. It's a Greek word that means sober or thinking clearly or helping someone to curb and discipline. So it's an interesting word. It isn't used a lot. But it's something that the older women are supposed to help the younger women come into their right mind. Carl?
Would train be appropriate?
No training would be appropriate. Because sometimes, does one conversation put someone in their right mind sometimes? No, sometimes they're ingrained. Which is one of the themes I want to talk about as this lesson proceeds, is that Peter says that there is a vain manner of life handed down from our fathers. And even members of the church, can you completely eradicate that out of the way you raise your kids and out of the way you treat your husbands and wives and out of the way that you conduct yourself? Does that just go away? No, it's something that we constantly have to be looking at too. Because when you are raised, your mother and father, they kind of imprint into us. And generally speaking, when a situation arises, we kind of fall back on that. And it's hard to overcome the problems that my mom and dad had in their relationship when I start incorporating them into my relationship. How am I going to get back into my right mind then?
Practice.
Well, the scriptures, right? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. And love your wives as your own body. Now, my dad didn't do that. Your dads do that? Everybody got perfect role models for that? No, we have one perfect role model. Who's that? As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So, to get back into our right mind, we have to take his example and incorporate that into the relationship instead of being like our fathers. But, generally speaking, when you're not thinking, what comes out? My dad comes out. My character and my dad comes out. And so, but Jesus is supposed to come out. All right, so yeah, that's a good point, Carl. Sometimes it's training. Sometimes it isn't a one-time situation. But once again, you have to have willing trainees, or it's pretty tough to train. All right, so there's several things. Actually, there's seven things that are mentioned here. And so the first one is to love their husbands. And I made the point last week because you would think this would be agape. or you would think that this would be something different. This is the general word for love. So even when we say I love you, from a human perspective, are there things we need to modify? You know, my selfish love for my wife, that sense of pleasure and enjoyment and happiness that I have in that relationship, and her love for her children in that respect, does it always head in the right direction? In other words, I think I told you about a friend of mine. He would go into the bedroom and take the belt to the pillow because he loved his kids. His wife wanted him to discipline them, but he couldn't do it. So he would hit the pillow. And does he need to be taught to love his children? Uh-huh. Yeah. See, that's not love. Now, he thought it was love, but it's not love. To love your own husbands, to love your own children, we have to understand something. We really don't know how to do that. We all think I'm a good husband, but is there room for improvement? And I'm a great wife. Is there room for improvement? Well, we need to be trained. We need to be disciplined. We need to get back into the right mindset. And there's really only one way to do that, and that's to apply the scriptures to this love. And because there's two kinds of standards. There's a subjective standard and there's an objective standard. The subjective standard is, I don't know how I could love my wife and children any more than I do. Is that a very high standard? No, because it's coming from here. Now, if I read the scriptures, can I learn that maybe I could love her a little more than I do? Well, yeah. So when Paul tells the older women to teach the younger women to put them back into the proper mind regarding loving their husbands, we've got to dig a little deeper here and try to understand what exactly is it that he's looking for here. Well, the first one, of course, would be the worthy woman. In Proverbs 31, it says that the heart of her husband safely trusts her. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now, that's a love that we need to learn, that women need to learn. How to, first of all, make sure that her husband can always safely trust in her. And we're not just talking about in the sexual realm here or even in the financial realm here. We're talking about a woman that will never say anything negative. My wife has protected me in ways that sometimes we were talking about on the way here tonight. I won't go into the details because she wouldn't like that. But we were talking about on the way here that she was criticized for something once that was me, but she said, I just took it because I didn't want your name to be sullied. Now, is that a pretty good love?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Although I told her, don't ever do that again because they need to see my flaws too. But she's always done that. She's protected me in so many ways. And if I do something bad, she's not going to hear from the kids aren't going to hear from her about that he did this or your father this, and her parents aren't going to hear about it. Now, I knew that, and is that a pretty comforting thing? Yeah, and would you call that love?
Yes.
To bear all things and believe all things and to hide things, flaws in somebody else's character, especially after they've repented of it. So that's one of the ways that older women can train the younger women to love their husbands, to protect them, to protect their reputation. And of course, the submission part. Is that an easy thing for, especially in our culture, is submission an easy thing to learn? No. But is it a part of loving your husband?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. Now, let's make one thing clear right now. Does any husband deserve to have his wife in submission? No, we don't deserve it. I mean, we're not such cut above people that, or greater or more special or somehow greater or higher or more noble. That's not why the submission is going on. The submission only goes on because that's how God created the home. Somebody has to lead. Somebody has to follow. It has nothing to do with deserving. As I say, if we were to add up all the flaws of the husbands, most wives could say, why would I want to put myself in submission to a man like that? But that's not really the issue. Carl?
Men have to be careful not to subject themselves to a superiority complex because of their wives' submission.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big problem because sometimes people will say, God put me over you and you don't have any right to criticize me. Wait a minute. That somehow, does that add up? That doesn't add up at all. Johnny?
I've got a note in my Bible here. I don't remember what it means. Maybe you do. It's Philotechnos. For this verse 5.
Yeah, yeah, that's the next one. Technos is children and philos is love. So that's the Greek word for loving children. Once again, we run into that. Remember how many times I've told you now it's the only time it's ever used in the Bible? And these two words, only time it's used in the Bible. So we're kind of put in that situation. George?
We need to remember that all Christians are to submit to each other, and wives are to submit to their husband, and husbands even to their wives, as it says in Ephesians, I believe.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right.
And also... It makes sense that God did this in the sense of providing, saying that the man should be the head of the home, because in any society, if you have an orderly society, you're going to have someone in charge and the other people underneath that for it to be done efficiently, usually.
Right. Yeah, and is the church in subjection to Christ?
Yes.
Right. But did Christ just do whatever he wanted in the Garden of Gethsemane? Did he do whatever he wanted? No, he had someone above him. And so his role as leader was dictated by God. And that's why he's the perfect example for the church, because he wasn't in a position, even with all his authority and perfection, could he do whatever he wanted? Could he just say, I'm in authority here and we're going to do it this way? No, he's always under God. And that's the way that a husband needs to be. But let's not get too diffuse here, because we're going to get into the submission when we get to the last point, where it says that she needs to be in submission to her own husband, and that the word of God may not be blasphemed. All right, let's talk just a couple seconds about loving children. Are there quite a few passages in the Proverbs about how we love children? Do they run counter to what the world would say is loving children?
Yes.
So discipline has a very negative connotation today. It's just really sad that the emphasis on our penal system is rehabilitation. Should it be on rehabilitation or punishment?
Punishment.
See, it should be on punishment. Rehabilitation is a secondary matter. Scripture is very clear that there are deeds that you need to pay for. There are deeds that you need to have that need to be dealt with. So, for example, God says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Is that rehabilitation? If you cut somebody's hand off, what's going to happen to you? I mean, we're not going to take you in and rehabilitate you. We're going to cut off your hand. Now, is cutting off your hand rehabilitation? No, it's punishment. Punishment, pure and simple. And God wants that, because that's how we learn. And so loving children requires a desire to see those children grow up to be productive. And discipline is a part of that. All right, I'm not going to spend much time on this one, because... I don't think anyone's in this auditorium that has young children anymore, so there's no point in spending a lot of time on it. Although I guess you older women could learn how to do it better, but most of you, I think, got that one down. So let's go ahead and move to the next point, which is discretion. Now, it's interesting. This word's already been used twice in Titus. It was used in chapter 1 and verse 8, where the elder is supposed to be sober. The word sober there, sober-minded, is this word. And then it is also used of the older man in chapter 2, verse 2, where it says that older men should be sober. And some translations have sober, some have temperate, some have discreet. Does a young woman have to be discreet in a different way than an older man? Are there different issues that a younger woman has to deal with and an older man doesn't have to deal with? And of course, yeah, there's some issues there. Now, the word means sound or in one's senses, curbing desires and impulses, and being self-controlled. So it means sensibly, moderately, and rationally. Now, you remember Proverbs 11:22? I always smile when I read this verse. I'm sure it's probably not funny to some people, but as a ring of gold in a pig's nose, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. And how does that strike your vision? A gold ring in a pig's nose. Makes it a beautiful pig, right? You're right. It's useless. It's useless. Well, you have a beautiful woman. Her exterior is just beautiful. People look upon her. She's beautiful, but as soon as you get to know her, she has no discretion. What's the beauty worth? See, it's not worth anything. At least it's not worth anything to God, and it's not worth anything to the godly. I guess Hollywood, does Hollywood care how discretion is? No. And that's sad. Virgil?
This word you're talking about, is this the same one that is used over in 1 Timothy 2, with proper clothing, modesty?
No, modesty is going to be this word chaste, the next one.
That's also used in regards to the elder, I think, that same.
Right.
Simply, it may not even be in this context in Titus, is it?
It's in Titus chapter 1 and verse 8, for the elders, sober-minded. So it means that, you know, it's basically, Jeannie and I made a decision that I wouldn't teach women alone. Is that discretion?
Yes.
Is that sound reasoning?
Yes.
Yeah. We have to do that. I never counted the money at the congregation. I was a treasurer in the congregation once, but I told them I'm not going to count the money. Now, why wouldn't I want to count the money? Why wouldn't a preacher want to count the money? Yeah, it just is that discretion? Is that smart?
Yes.
No, it you need to be there. I like Virgil's statement. Downstream ramifications. Everything that you do has consequences. Discretion means you see the consequences, and what do? You run the other way. What's that proverb that says? The wise man sees the danger and flees, but the fool, you know, just passes right on into it. Do I see it, Carl?
Yeah, there used to be, considering the Septuagint, the ring and the pig's nose, there used to be years ago, you don't hear too much anymore, but beauty's only skin deep.
Right.
It's what's inside that
counts.
Yeah,
that's right. The Beach Boys captured it. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, marry an ugly wife, right? I sing that song sometimes. Okay, to my wife, by the way. The next one is, the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. Now, that's lack of discretion. But the divorce rate is testimony that a lot of people, men and women, are pulling down their house with their own hands. They don't have discretion. They don't have self-control. They don't watch their words, control their circumstances, and it's just a terrible situation. We need younger women who are acting with discretion. Now, remember where we're headed here, because verse 5 is not just for submission to husband. It's all seven of them, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. When a young Christian woman is indiscreet and does things that bring reproach, it doesn't just bring reproach on her, it brings reproach on the church. And many congregations are struggling under the blasphemy that people are rightfully able to say because of the conduct. Now, Paul dealt with that back in, Romans chapter 2? Where he tells the Jews, the word of God is blasphemed because of you among the Gentiles, because of your hypocrisy, because of your What's that passage in Isaiah, the one I really like? It says, smoke to my eyes, and is the man who says, I'm holier than you, when he's an ungodly wretch himself. It makes God disgusted when somebody says, don't come near to me, when he's just as ungodly as they are. And so creates a problem. All right, chaste. And this is one of those words that is so much bigger than an English word that we could use. So it comes from the word holy. It comes from the word sanctified, set apart, pure from carnality. And then as it's practically applied, it means modesty. It means decorum, pure from fault. It originally signified something that awakens religious awe. Now, a woman with a pure heart can create a sense of religious awe in the hearts of people who can discern that. And it's like that passage in 1 Peter 3 that says that a meek and quiet spirit is precious in the sight of God. And that meek and quiet spirit is a part of this word chaste, because he uses it as an illustration after he says, as your husband sees your chaste conduct. He doesn't go on to explain it. And obviously, in a marriage relationship, is it talking about clothing? A husband always wants his wife to be modest around him? Oh, see, that's a part of it. I mean, when he's around other people, he wants her to be modest. But there's a much deeper meaning, and that's why I say this word just kind of expands out. Yes, it covers modesty, but much more. And so this is the word for someone who is struggling and striving. It's the word reverent that we talked about last week, where how does a woman manifest her reverence? Well, the only way she can manifest it is by being the perfect exemplifying, I guess I'd say, scripture. In other words, you read Proverbs 31 and you say, this woman comes to mind. You read 1 Peter chapter 3 and you say, this woman comes to mind. This is the first woman I think about, and hopefully it's your own wife. Hopefully it's the person that you spend your time with and know intimately, and you read these verses and you say, like Proverbs 31, her husband rises up and calls her blessed, and her children also. Many women have done well, but you excel them all. Now, how many of us, when we think that, think of our wife? And it's pretty sad if we don't, because then that woman is not discreet, that woman is not chaste. Virgil?
Yeah. Years ago, we used to have a system in this country, we call it finishing school.
Ah, yes.
Okay. So, a lot of us remember that. And really what it was all about was teaching, whether it's right or wrong, it mainly dealt with the women. It was in finishing school. But the men should have been there too, young men.
Yeah.
The emphasis was learning enough to be able to conduct yourself appropriately in whatever situation you're in. And that, I think, is a key to the life as a Christian. We're talking about the women and how they dress.
Right.
There's a place to have skimpiness of clothes in certain circumstances. But then another time, no. You don't want that. It should not be that way, because it portrays the wrong image.
Right.
And the same way with the men, how they conduct themselves. If they spend all the time doing nonsense, then what are the people around them going supposed to think? That's what they do. They do nonsense.
Sure. Yeah, and her husband safely trusts in her.
Yes.
And because of her being chaste, he doesn't have to worry about what's going on. I mean, when I leave for Africa for 6 weeks, there are some wives, would you be worried if you were gone for 6 weeks?
Yeah,
yeah, but I never worry about that at all. Because I know she's chaste. Go ahead.
In our day, in today's world, Christian women have to be awfully careful not to be caught up with every fad that comes along.
Right.
Especially in clothing, fashions, and hairdos, and all this type of thing that you see on TV.
Yeah, that's right. there appears to me to be a concerted effort in Hollywood and the fashion industry to turn our young women into harlots, turn our young women into sexual objects. The clothing that's out there, think of the bathing suits. What's happened to the bathing suits in the last 50 years? I mean, it's just incredible that people could go outside in that kind of clothing. Leslie?
Not only is the industry or society trying to turn women into harlots, but they're also emphasizing androgyny. There's a lot of menswear in women's clothes. Is that, I mean, it's modest.
Right.
But they might look like a man.
Yeah.
They're emphasizing all this gender fluidity.
Sure. Too. Yeah. The unisex movement, right?
It's very weird.
So, yeah, and we have to rise above that. I mean, it's like when you go to a restaurant, you can only order off the menu. And if the menu doesn't please you, what do? You don't go back there. Well, when you go into the clothing stores, what are they catering to? And many a time, I'll send Jeannie out, go get yourself something. She'll come home, I couldn't find anything. I mean, there just wasn't anything in there I'd wear. Well, some women, he said I could buy something, I'm going to buy something. But, by the way, Jeannie, did I earn my dollar yet? I'm really complimenting her highly today. I thought I'd put some levity in there because I don't want you to think I'm singling her out. George?
To say that women have to worry about their clothes and what they wear and don't wear, and it's just as important for men. People tend to think women don't lust after naked men. They do, and it can be proven. So we need to be careful, each one of us, not just women as we talk here, because men have to be chased too.
Right. No, I'm not arguing that, except our context right now is the young women. But, Potiphar's wife, what did she do? She lusted after Joseph. I don't think he did anything to deserve that, but she did. But I think the two strongest ones are the two where it says when the priest goes up to the altar, which is climbing the stairs, he's going to be wearing breeches that cover completely to the knees. And women tell us, well, you know, you could be above the knees. Well, men couldn't back then. And God said, I don't want your nakedness to be showing. So, yeah, it's an issue for men and for women. All right, to be chaste, and then homemakers. And I guess of all the words in this context, this one, unfortunately, and again, it's just cultural. I mean, back in the 1800s, if you read this, women need to be homemakers, would there be any complications here at all? No. But today's society, a lot of young women, we were talking the other day, the preacher at the congregation in College Station, they have about 200 or 300 young people. And the preacher will get up and he'll say, you know, you young ladies, you're going to school to get a profession, but I just want you to understand, when you get married, you're supposed to be home. How's that hit you? Some of you are saying, that's not true. And some of you are saying, that's exactly right. Now, again, don't start hitting me with, what if a husband dies and she's a widow? That's a whole different situation. We're talking about normality here. And under normality, and again, we have to look at the word before we get too far into this, because, as I say, maybe what they were doing in the 1800s is not what the scriptures were teaching, and we can't use that as a basis. So what exactly does homemaker mean? Or keeper at home. And so let me just read the definition. Once again, where is it elsewhere in the Bible? This is it. You know, you can't go anywhere else to look, so this is it. Let me just read you a couple definitions. It's a compound Greek word. The first word is house, and the second word is keeper. So let me just read it to you. Keeper, a keeper at home, one who looks after domestic affairs. The second one, watching the house. Of a watchdog, the mistress of the house, contemptuously of a man, a stay-at-home, one who won't go forth to war. He stays at home. Now, then the last one, oikos, home, and ouros, a keeper, the keeper of a house, keeping at home, taking care of household affairs, domestic. Now, that's how the Greeks used it. Again, we don't have anything in the Bible to, you know, a lot of words you determine their definition by how they're used in the Bible. Can you do that with this word? Not used anywhere in the Bible. And you can't really see it in context here, because all he says is, on the one hand, she needs to be discreet and chaste, and on the other hand, good and obedient. What's that got to do with homemaker? Nothing. So we have to look at the word. So, what good's a watchdog who's out working in the fields? See, where's a watchdog need to be? He needs to be at home. When we're all away, if we let our neighbor take our dog over to do something with it, then who's watching the home? So that word helps us. And then I really like the one, the man who won't go to war. He wants to stay home. Well, do I understand what that means? He's not going to go out. He's not going to do what he's supposed to do. He's going to stay home. And then the one who looks after the domestic affairs. Now, that doesn't give us a complete understanding, but you really can't say this verse, this doesn't have anything to do with a woman staying home. No, it has everything to do with her staying home. So where's the line? You know, at what point is there a line? And people want to rush over and talk about Lydia as seller of purple. And even the worthy woman. I mean, if you read the worthy woman in Proverbs, she's considering fields and buying it. She's perceiving that her merchandise is good. She's out working. She's taking care of the needs of the saints. She's doing benevolent activities. She's not just staying home all the time. But yeah, the priority of the woman is the children. She will be saved by her what, is what Paul says in by her childbearing, which is childbearing and child rearing. It doesn't mean you bring a child in the world, that'll bring you salvation. It means the work of the men is working with the present generation. The work of women is working with the future generation. Moses became a great man because of her mother, or because of his mother. I believe David. David had two women in his lineage, interestingly enough. He had Rahab the harlot, and he had Ruth the Moabite. They were his great-great-grandmother and his great-great-grandmother. And that distilled down, I believe, into him. Because when a woman is home, instilling convictions and scripture and understanding of the priorities, then she's fulfilling her role. If she's letting someone else raise her children while she's out working, and those children grow up to be unfaithful, does she have any responsibility? I mean, you can't say, no, that's not her fault. She needed to make money so they could have a nicer car. She needed to make money so they could have a nicer home. She needed to make money so that she could have things. And if you look back as our country went from, say, the 1800s, where women didn't work out of the home, and, of course, I know World War II set in order or set in precedence some things, but I remember my mom, she didn't need to work. She worked so that we could have other things. Now, she was careful about it, but still, I think that these are things that they fit into this. Now, they don't fit every situation. Every situation has to be judged on its own merits. But I'm just saying that the definition of the word and the basic concept here. Now, if a woman has to work so they don't starve, is that a little different situation? Well, yeah, that's a little different. But the reality is that older women are to teach the younger women to stay home like the watchdog, to stay home like the man who doesn't want to go to war. He wants to stay at home. And this is the concept here. Now, I've gotten myself in real trouble in other congregations, you know, by pushing this maybe a little harder than some people can appreciate. But I get very concerned when both the mother and the father are working and nobody's training the children. And you know what's going to happen if those children aren't getting trained. And yet, that's their choice. And sometimes, as I say, you don't know all the details. You can't really come in and say this is a sin, but it's not wise. Sometimes it is a sin. Sometimes people sacrifice their children for things. Carl and then George.
Sometimes people are not trained to live within their means. And that's an excuse for the woman working outside the home.
Right.
many times the husband, as the economy grows and situations in our culture develop, many times the husband is not trained in a profession to make enough to take care of the family. See, for instance, he's a worker in a, say, a service station. He doesn't make enough money to, if the rent goes up, he don't make enough money to cover it.
Right.
He doesn't have the skill. Then someone's got to help him pitch in and help that family. And if the woman has a priority, her priority is home. I know my mom worked outside, but her priority, she worked outside and came home and worked 8 hours at home, too.
Right.
You see? And that's not fair, but it was something that had that they decided to do. And I, but many times it's because, as you say, you want a new car or a new wardrobe or something, and he's not bringing it enough, so I'm going leave my priority and go outside.
Right. And there's no one-size-fits-all here. I mean, every situation is different, but this is something that younger women have to factor in. Before they make that decision, they need to understand this is what God wants them to be doing. Now, they may not be able to, and if they're not able to, they have to justify that before God on the judgment day, because this is what God says he wants them to do. Now, sometimes it'll be the husband, sometimes it's going to be the wife. Some husbands want their wives to work. Demand that they work. And, okay, we got lots of hands here, so we'll probably end the rest of the class with the comments. Go ahead, George.
Back in the time of the writing of this, and even before, the situation of husbands and wives was extremely different than now, and you referred to the 1800s. In the 1800s, this was, in this country, largely an agricultural society, and women worked out in the field a lot. Alongside their husbands.
And their children.
They took their daughters.
Right.
Their daughters went out there. The daughters may have been required to get up early in the morning before school and go milk some cows and so forth. But they were learning from this. The mothers were chief training the children and the father too. And they learned responsibility that they needed.
Right.
We even read in the book of Ruth that the young women were working in the field.
Yeah, no, and I never said they can't work.
I know you didn't. I'm just saying
okay.
Society was a lot different. Now, every body seems to think of a woman is worthless unless she's out working for a job for some company or something.
Right.
That ain't so.
No, that's true. But if a woman goes to school to be a doctor, then let her be a doctor. But if she wants to be a mother, then she's going to have to make some sacrifices to be the doctor. And if she's not willing to make those sacrifices and forces the children to make those sacrifices, then I think she's going to have to answer to that on Judgment Day. And, you know, there's certain times when a woman has three kids that are under five, she's going to have a totally different situation than when she has three kids that are in their 20s or in their teens. And so all of this has to be factored in to how that works. Okay, Leslie, you had your hand up? Oh, it was Jeannie. Oh, okay.
I was just going to say there's a wide variety of things nowadays that a woman can do from home. If she's computer literate, there's many things. She can also turn her home so into a workplace that she keeps it from being a home. And so there's a balance there, but there's a lot that can be done. And the worthy woman, a lot of people want to use her, but she was an older woman. So it shows us that as a younger woman, we need to be establishing this kind of a home and raising our children, getting them to a certain age. But the worthy woman, her husband sat in the gates. He was a gray-haired man. And so she's out doing all these things because her children are of an age where they can rise up and call her blessed.
Right.
And there's just a lot. I mean, there's a lot of variables here for women nowadays to be able to do and not just be at home.
Right. Okay, Rob?
Well, and it's one of the most honorable professions, if you will. I mean, for a woman, in most cases, first 6 years of their life, then they're going to end up in school, so they're probably not as much of an issue. But those first years, and then you mentioned something earlier about do you really want somebody else raising your kids? Because, like, my wife does daycare. And you know what? She's raising those kids. The parents aren't. They're there 8-9 hours a day. And so, I think she's doing a great job doing that. But if you were to let somebody else, let's just tell the truth of it, raise your kids, there's nothing you can do about when you're not there. How are they? What are they? In today's society, the influence that the world has, it's a scary proposition to think that they're going to say or do something that's going to embed in that kid's mind the rest of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the scary side of this. Carly, had you had it?
I was just going to add a little humor here that the homemaker in today's terminology has changed. It's domestic engineer.
Right. Yep. I remember Jeannie going to the doctor one time, and he said, "What do you do for a living?" She said, I'm a homemaker." And she put her head down, and she said, "That's nothing to be ashamed of. That's a wonderful thing." So, did I say that right? Sometimes I go home, and she says, "I wasn't like it was at all." Go ahead, Leslie.
By the same token, I mean, of course, you know, I'm a travel nurse, and I'm not at home. But it's important for a man to be at home as well, to really appreciate. Sometimes men don't appreciate that homemaking woman, and they'll say, "Oh, she's not doing anything, or she's always tired, or she's this, this, and that." If they stayed home with the child,
yeah,
three of them all day long, plus do laundry, plus do cooking, plus keep the house and the grounds that they do, they understand that exhaustion at 8 o'clock.
Sure, and I think that's why a lot of women take a job outside of the home. It's a lot easier.
It's easier to work out
doing the work at home. So, but like I said, if you want to have children, you become a steward. You have a responsibility, and you're going to answer to God for that stewardship. So, you know, if you want to be a doctor, fine. Don't get married. I mean, that's fine. What do you mean I can't get married? You get married. But if you're going to have children, something's got to give. And this passage, I mean, it's a roadblock to a lot of people because it does require that the buck stops with the woman regarding being the keeper at home. And a lot of people today, "Well, my wife can make more money than me, so I'm staying home and letting her go to work." And I haven't worked that one out yet. I'm not exactly sure how that works. So I haven't formed an opinion, but I just don't see it as being the best idea. I think it just reverses the roles and probably confuses the children. So, but all right, well, we'll stop there. I'm not going to pick up with that. I don't want to review next week. We'll just pick up with good and obedient to their own husbands and then move from there because we could spend a lot of time on this, and I think we've covered it about as well as we can. So, and if you disagree, just ask a question or make a comment next week, and we'll go right back into it. So, all right, we'll go ahead and stop there. Thank you.